Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Yesterday, the Supreme Court heard the oral arguments of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, an abortion case that could have serious consequences to Roe versus Wade and access to abortion in this country. What wasn't really discussed were the actual real-world impacts this would have on women forced to give birth. A journalist we have on the show, a writer from The Atlantic who had twins recently, tweeted this yesterday. Nothing has negatively impacted my happiness, my health, my finances, my work, my prospects like having children. I love them boundlessly. I chose to have them and would do it again. But it has to be a choice. Without a choice, women just aren't equal human beings. A national decades-long study looked at the actual impact access to abortion has on women's quality of life. It was called the Turnaway Study, and it looks at both women who had access to abortion and those who haven't, and it's the first and so far the only study of its kind. Its author, Dr. Diane Greene Foster, joined me after Texas's restrictive six-week law was enacted earlier this fall. And I asked her how, after years of Roe v. Wade, that there was only one study like this so far.
It isn't actually that easy to study abortion. And the studies that had been cited by law, for example, recruited people. One that was particularly impactful with the Supreme Court recruited people who had joined some support group for folks who were having trouble coping with their abortion. So clearly it selected people who were having problems, and we didn't know if those experiences were representative or not. And that definitely is not the right way to do an unbiased study. And so we really wanted to know what's the effect among people that represent abortion patients generally.
Can you tell us a little bit about the conditions of the study, who you were interviewing, how long you were following the women, how many women you spoke with?
Yeah. So we recruited about 1,000 women from 30 abortion facilities across the country. And we picked these facilities because they provided the latest abortions within 150 miles. So we were hoping, for the sake of science, that we would find people who, upon being denied an abortion, would carry the pregnancy to term, and we would see what the effect of not having access to abortion was on people's lives compared to people who did receive an abortion. And at those sites, we recruited people who were just under the limit, who received their abortion. But since many of these sites had limits in the second trimester, and the vast majority, over 90% of people who get abortions actually do it in the first trimester, we also recruited a first trimester sample. So we'd know, you know, what's the effect of having an earlier abortion or a later abortion compared to no abortion, all among people who were in the circumstances where they did not want to carry a pregnancy to term.
You write in your book, the Turnaway study brings powerful evidence about the ability of women to foresee consequences and make decisions that are best for their lives and family. How did you see this play out in the study?
Yeah, so one of the most interesting things is at the very first interview, 1 week after they either received or were denied an abortion, we asked people their reasons for wanting to end this pregnancy. And they gave us reasons that closely align with other clinic-based studies of people getting abortions. So the most common reason people give is that they don't feel like they can financially afford to support a child or another child, that it's not the right time for a baby, that their relationship with the man involved isn't strong enough to support a child, that they need to take care of the children they already have, that it will interfere with future opportunities like completing their schooling. And when we look at these reasons that people give us, they exactly line up with the consequences of being denied an abortion. When people are deciding about having an abortion, they understand that they're pregnant, and if they continue to be pregnant, they'll have a child. They understand what the consequences will be for their lives. And so I really, one of the, you know, you could look at the various outcomes that we found where women were better off if they were received an abortion then they were denied one. For example, economically, they were better off. Their physical health was better off. They were able to take care of their existing children with more economic security. And all of those outcomes were given as reasons by people about why they wanted to have an abortion. They were making decisions, understanding the consequences of carrying a pregnancy to term.
My guest is Dr. Diana Greene Foster. She's the author of the Turnaway Study, 10 Years, 1,000 Women, and the Consequences of Having or Being Denied an Abortion. You note in the book that there's these pervasive ideas that having an abortion has an adverse effect on the mental health of the person having the procedure. So what did your research find in relation to the idea, those questions around mental health? Were there any differences in the mental health of women who received an abortion versus those who did not?
Yeah, this was the main reason we started the study, was to answer the question, does abortion hurt women in terms of mental health? And we were very careful to ask both women who received and those who were denied the exact same questions that are validated scales of mental health. And so they're asked these questions every 6 months for 5 years. And what we found was that there were initial differences between the two groups, but not what one would expect if you thought that abortion hurts women. In fact, we found that people who were denied abortions had worse mental health initially. They had higher anxiety, lower self-esteem, lower life satisfaction. But by 6 months, the two groups looked the same, and they looked the same for the next 5 years. So really, there isn't a large mental health difference between receiving a wanted abortion and being denied a wanted abortion. But note that both groups, it's not because both groups were doing badly, both groups actually improved over time. And I think that the experience of having an unwanted pregnancy, of having to look for an abortion, it's not easy even before this new Texas law, and that's there's a lot of stress involved in realizing you don't have the support in your life or the resources in your life to carry a pregnancy to term. And so this difference shows up near the time of the unwanted pregnancy, and over time the two groups do similarly. They do similarly in mental health, but they don't do similarly in physical health. And I think that's because people grossly underestimate the physical health burden of carrying a pregnancy to term. I think there's this kind of callous idea that, oh, they'll just stay pregnant for another 3 to 6 months and deliver a child, then everything will be the same as it would have been. But it's not. It has continued pregnancy and childbirth has long-lasting effects on people's bodies. And we see that differences in physical health that last for 5 years based on whether the women initially got an abortion or were denied. And it's all to the detriment of people who were denied an abortion. We don't see long-lasting physical health harm from having an abortion.
What about in terms of economics?
So we asked people each interview about their income, their household size, whether they were able to afford basic expenses like food, housing, and transportation. And on those, we see differences in self-reported economic well-being, where women who are denied an abortion are more likely to report that they just don't have the resources to pay for basic living needs. And this self-reported economic hardship I was contacted by an economist at the University of Michigan, Sarah Miller, who linked the Turnaway study data to archived credit reports. And so we could see that even credit agencies who had no idea whether the women had ever become pregnant or had a child or not, that they were able to pick up that there was economic hardship among the people who were denied an abortion. So they were more likely to have large credit card debt, lower credit scores, evictions, and bankruptcies than women who received their abortion. It confirms what women reported to us themselves, that having to raise a child when you don't feel like you have the means to do it is associated with hardship.
And did it have an impact on employment opportunities?
Yeah, so people show there's a difference in ability to have a full-time job, which is immediately lower upon the birth of a child, and takes years to catch up to the rate of people who had abortions. And note that some of the people who have abortions later went on to have kids. It wasn't that they, I mean, some people who have abortions do so because the circumstances aren't right then. It's not that they never want to have a kid. They just want to have a kid when they have the resources and the circumstances, the relationships, the support to raise that child. And so when we look at women who had kids because they were denied an abortion compared to women who had kids because they received an abortion and had one under with better circumstances, we actually see that the child born does better if the woman has some control over the circumstances of the birth.
My guest is Dr. Diana Green Foster. She's the director of the Turnaway Study. The name of the book is the Turnaway Study, 10 Years, 1,000 Women, and the Consequences of Having and Being Denied an Abortion. It's so interesting to read the book and to hear you describe, you know, things that are measurable, that are objective. You can measure economic mm-hmm. differences. You can measure educational attainment differences. You can measure certain health outcomes. Yet, you know, in the book, we spend a lot of time talking about abortion through an ethical lens, the ethics of abortion, without thinking about what might cause a woman to seek an abortion in the first yeah. place, without thinking about it in truly sort of objective ways. First of all, what do we know about the most cited reasons why a woman might seek an abortion?
So the reasons people seek an abortion is that they feel that the circumstances of this pregnancy aren't conducive to having a child. So it can be that they don't have the money for housing or to pay for the many expenses involved in having a kid or having to reduce working to care for a child. They feel like it's not the right time for a baby. That can be because of their relationship or because of schooling. Many give partner-related reasons. About a third say it has to do with the man involved. Sometimes that's just the relationship is new, the relationship is poor, and sometimes it's actually abuse. About 5% of women in the study say that they had been physically harmed by the man involved in the 6 months prior to the seeking an abortion. And when we follow people over time, we see that violence decreases among the people who get abortions, and it stays level among the people who are denied an abortion. And that's entirely because the women who are denied an abortion have continued contact with that man because they've just had a child. So there's even a difference in exposure to violence. Returning to reasons people give, some people say that they just want a better life for the baby than they can provide right now. So I think that they're, again, making careful decisions. It doesn't mean, sometimes people say it's a difficult decision, and sometimes they say it's an easy decision. But I think it's often a very thoughtful decision. And we have policies that ask people to spend more time with somehow an assumption that people are making this decision without thinking about it. And the study is completely clear that people are making careful, even responsible decisions about their pregnancy. There are people who become pregnant and by accident or unplanned who decide to carry the pregnancy to term because they know the conditions are right in their lives. Not every pregnancy has to be planned. But when a woman decides that the pregnancy, that she can't support it, that it isn't a good time, I think she generally understands that it will be very tough to carry that pregnancy to term.
You chose to ask questions about regrets. Why did you want to go down that road?
I'm glad I did because I think that not finding mental health harm is one thing, but just because people aren't depressed doesn't mean they aren't sad. And we wanted to know, you know, how often are people, what range of emotions do people have after receiving an abortion or being denied an abortion? And so we asked about both positive and negative emotions, and we asked them repeatedly over time. Consistent with other research that has only included people who have abortions, we find that relief is the most common emotion, but some people also do feel regret. And regret, feeling the emotion regret, can be, I regret that I was in the situation where I needed to have an abortion. And in fact, over 90% of the people who say that they feel the emotion regret, also feel that they made the right decision. And the most famous statistic from the study is that over 95% of women who got abortions feel like they made the right decision over the 5 years. In fact, it creeps up so that it's more than 99% by the end of the 5 years. So people can have a range of emotion. And in fact, when we call them repeatedly, people say that they've stopped thinking about the most common thing is they say they've stopped thinking about the abortion. And the only time they think about it is when we call them for these interviews.
You write that I didn't design this study thinking about politics or even about women's rights. I came to this work with a desire to document both positive and negative aspects of abortion and carrying a pregnancy to term. Have you seen your study used in a political way, however?
It has been used in state courts in trying to decide the constitutionality of or legality of various restrictions. It's been used in Latin America where there's, I think, more of an emphasis or more of a concern about mental health harm. Will probably be cited in this next Mississippi Supreme Court case that's going to be heard in June. That's an 15-week ban. And there's just not that much research about why people have later abortions and what the consequences would be of restricting people from making a strict gestational limit on abortion. So I suspect that this study will come up again quite a bit in this next Supreme Court case.
Is there something that you wish that people on either side of this choice understood better about the issue?
People who are making the decision to have an abortion, I think that they've been heaped with stigma about this and told that abortion is necessarily wrong. And I think they should trust themselves to make the decision because it's such a personal decision and, you know, the consequences are long lasting. Yes. And for people who are in this for the politics and aren't considering the people involved, I wish they would step back and consider that this, to have the government make this health decision that affects the trajectory of people's lives is a huge intrusion into people's lives.
That was my conversation with Dr. Diana Greene Foster, author of The Turnaway Study.